Good afternoon, Susan, Chuck, and welcome to the Last Post podcast series interviews. And obviously, welcome to the fact that you joined our Inspirational Australian Women series.
Good afternoon, Greg, and thank you very much. I'm very honoured to be part of this wonderful thing.
Thank you so much. Susan, you have a very interesting, not only family history, but of course, roles that you've undertaken yourself in regards to remembrance of veterans. And I guess, first of all, one of the things that came to mind, obviously, was what happened to your son, Ben. I believe Ben was taken in the direct intake in the military back in 2005. How did that come about that he went in through that way, Susan?
The boys, the Australians, first went into Afghanistan in 2002, just all the SAS boys. So it was very cloak and dagger in those days. And then they came back home. And then since things escalated in Afghanistan, and the type of war that was being conducted over there, it required special forces to be part of. And we in Australia, in the commandos and in the SAS, just didn't have enough men on in those regiments. And the government the ADF put out a huge advertisement in the Australian newspapers, virtually saying, "Have you got what it takes to be a commando?" And at the time, Ben was working as a crocodile handler.
Wow.
At Hartley's Creek Crocodile Farm. He
wow.
had a lot of courage. And he was home for the weekend saying, "God, I love my job." He loved reptiles, always had pet ones as a boy. And I said, "Well, honey, look at this. You know, you're an active, fit young man." "Oh," he said, "my back's bad." Well, he didn't say bad. He said other. "My back's bad, my feet are bad." And I said, "Well, you know, work on it." Anyway, he did, and he strengthened his back. He applied for the direct intake. The ADF couldn't get enough special forces from their own ranks within the army, so they put it out to mature gentlemen. You know, there were surveyors, there were doctors, you know. Ben was nearly 21 when he applied.
Wow.
And that's how he went in.
Okay, that's interesting, of course.
And I was just going to say, I think there was about 248 or something in his intake, and not even 30 made it through. So it was very tough selection.
Wow. So his back held up after all, Susan. His back was all right.
It did.
That's wonderful. Now, look, of course, Ben was involved in a tragic accident in 2010. But before then, he had had, I believe, three deployments to Afghanistan.
He was on his third deployment, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. Can you tell us a little about those, Susan?
He went over in 2007 and with what training he'd had to date and courses he'd done, he was in what they call recon. So he was one of those chappies riding around in the four-wheel motorbikes in the mountains of Afghanistan.
Wow.
And patrolling the green zones. He did that again in 2009, I think it was. And then he was, between his second and third deployment, he did his sniper training. And so in 2010, he went back as part of the sniper team.
Right. Now, can you mind taking us through what happened in 2010 that led up to Ben's death? Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can. They'd been involved, the SAS and the commandos, in quite a very intense battle in the Valley of Shah Wali Kot. It had gone on for weeks. And the night of the 21st of June, the three chopper load of boys were going back in for the final. It was virtually the final mission. They flying in after midnight, pitch dark in three choppers, all in night vision gear, etc. And Ben was in the lead chopper, sitting in the front row with his sergeant and best mate. And the chopper pilot came in too fast, too low, and just chipped the runners on the chopper, and it crashed.
Tragic accident. Tragic
and
accident.
It was sick. It wasn't. It was found to be pilot error, but you know, no one holds him directly responsible. Nobody wants accidents like that to happen. But fortunately, there was two choppers following behind. They initially thought Ben's chopper had been shot down, so they came in you know, fight mode, and then they realised what had happened. So there were, you know, a lot of young soldiers there to help with the wounded. Ben actually survived the crash and was treated on the ground, and the chap that treated him thought he had saved him. His femoral artery had been severed. But in the chopper on the way to Kandahar, the tourniquet came off.
Jeez, goodness gracious me. Ben's, the loss of Ben led to, I suppose, one of the things that we learn in life is that good will come from bad. And, of course, what has evolved over the years, particularly with your role, is, I guess, if you could take us through this, Susan, of course, we have a couple of things here to discuss. The Avenue of Honour at Yungaburra, and, of course, that's to commemorate the fallen in Afghanistan. And of course, which apparently that follows Ben's gun carriage route along the banks of Lake Tinaroo. That must be beautiful.
Yeah, it is lovely. We used to, because Ben grew up on the Atherton Tablelands and spent a lot of time on the water, either water skiing or kite surfing, or just we used to go out a lot on a boat. And so we had his funeral on the banks of the dam, and there's a road that leads down to the point where his service was held. And the local population wanted to honour Ben in some way. And I was at an Anzac morning service in Yungaburra, and the guest speaker, John Hardy, an ex-Nasho, was talking about avenues of trees, memorials around Australia, and I thought that would be perfect to honour all of them with an avenue of trees. And that's how the seed was planted, and it went from there.
How beautiful.
So we built it to honour all those. It is.
How beautiful.
We get a lot of comments, and it's very, very popular visitation point for not only veterans but other people coming to honour our fallen boys.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful spot too, Yungaburra, and that avenue of honour there, a beautiful thing. We also know that you became involved with Sean and the 42 for 42, which is the building, obviously, then which you've done, the building of the Afghanistan Memorial Garden at Milton. And in fact, you were secretary of that for 5 years. How did you come in contact with Sean and 42 for 42, and how did that evolve into something so wonderful?
Oh, well, my life took some many different turns after Ben's passing, and I ended up moving down to Brisbane. And not long after, my daughter also came down, and I just saw on Facebook that they were having this walk at Suncorp Stadium to honour the fallen. And Ben's hour was about 4 a.m. in the morning, so each hour is dedicated to one of the boys. So my daughter and I went in there to do our Ben's hour. And I hadn't met any of the young men that were putting this, had this wonderful idea of building a memorial. And we got in there, and then we hung around, and we had coffees, and we got chatting, and then it was just before Remembrance Day, that particular one. So I then took a donation tin over to the brewery across the road at lunchtime and rattled it, and I don't know, got a $500 or something. And then we stayed and walked a lot that day. And then I got chatting to Sean and the other boys and said, you know, what's going on? What are you doing? What are your plans? And it was sort of, they knew what they wanted to do, but they were a little bit, you know, vague about it. And I thought, well, you need someone, you need good fundraising. You know, this is, I've built one. I know it costs a lot of money. And had lunch at the Cricketers Club at the Gabba and saw that beautiful venue and thought, a luncheon here, I'll put on a luncheon. And of course, my background's hospitality. And I went to the guys and said, I'd like to organise a luncheon for you. And they were a bit hesitant and worried about it. Anyway, we've just had our sixth last week. And
wonderful.
It's just become an institution, and it's not only been a great fundraiser, but it's just created this beautiful environment for families of the fallen, veterans past, serving servicemen and women to come along. And we just have a fabulous time overlooking the Gabba.
Isn't that fantastic? And I tell you what too, Susan, it must give you great joy to see how this is the result of your involvement with 42 for 42 and Sean and the boys and women. What do you get from that? Some feeling. What feeling do you get from your involvement? Happiness, I imagine. How do you feel about it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's a strange thing to say, but I often say to people, I lost one son, a beautiful boy, but I've gained hundreds of really other beautiful young men in my life, and their wives and their children. So, yeah, you know, you've got to look, there's silver lining somewhere along the line for everything. I guess I'm a people's person. I enjoy, otherwise I wouldn't have been in hospitality all my life. So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed working with the boys and their families and with other family members that live in the Brisbane area. And it's just become a really beautiful, beautiful thing for me. I get a lot of enjoyment and pleasure out of it. I cry
Excellent.
A lot and have my moments, of course, when we're all together. And yeah, but it's super.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking us through your responses, Susan. And I guess the added acknowledgement and knowledge that nature, we have nature involved, obviously, with the Yungaburra there, which is totally beautiful, and the Memorial Garden too, which, of course, I mean, garden is in many terms used as a way of expressing heaven or a place to visit to compose yourself and have thoughts. Is that how gardens are to you?
Oh, yes. I grew up in the country and on a property and we had huge gardens. So all my life I've just, and all my, with my children, we always had old country homes with huge gardens. So, yeah, I find a lot of peace in gardens. I love it. Find a lot of solace in them, I suppose, yeah. And, you know, it's incorporating the memorial and the plaques and the story of Afghanistan conflict in the Afghanistan War Memorial Garden in Brisbane. That's so beautiful too. You know, every plaque, every fallen has his own plaque, and that tells the story of his life, not just in the military, but the families were invited to write their own story about their son.
Oh, wow.
So you can just go up with your phone, put your phone to the QR code, and it downloads each young man's story.
Wow, I didn't
And
know that.
Those stories are also on the 42 website as well when you go into the fallen. So we try to really humanize it as just young men, not just soldiers.
Of course. And I guess, well, I don't guess, I know, this is one of the reasons why we reach out to people like you, is because, of course, the merging of the veteran community with the general community, we're all human and we all know veterans or know of families of veterans, and you walk past people in the street, you don't know who you're walking past. They have their own stories. So be able to access those stories of those young men that have fallen humanizes it and brings a personal touch that is there for the visitor to use if wished. That's a beautiful thing to do.
Yes. We also, part of 42, now that the memorial's built, it's still not quite finished. There's a lot of history to still be put on QR codes on the storyboards. We're still working on that with the war memorial. But we really want to educate school children about the conflict and what the young men and women of Australia are now doing to protect our shores. So we take a lot of school groups through.
Wow.
We have quite a good involvement, several of the schools up here, which some of the fallen were ex-students of. We've got a big cricket match, challenge cricket match coming up between two schools shortly. At the luncheon on Friday, we had three lovely young students from St. Lawrence's College come along and volunteer and sell raffle tickets and help with the auction. And oh, it's just really great to get the kids involved. And
These
every year I go and speak at one of the schools here in Brisbane at
Yep.
their Anzac Day Service for Primary School,
Yep.
which has a lot of veteran children or children of veterans at that school. And a lot of our committee members go to other schools. So we're trying to educate the younger generation of the sacrifice, not only of our boys, but the past servicemen and women going way back.
Very, very good, very good, Susan. And a great educational tool to do so. Where's the cricket match on at?
Look, I'm not sure exactly where they're playing it. I think it's going to be at one of the schools, maybe Maris Brothers or St. Lawrence's. I'm not sure.
Yes, that's all right.
But it's going to
We'll
be towards the end of this year. It's on.
Oh, wonderful. We'll follow up with that and we'll give that coverage in the magazine too, because that sounds absolutely wonderful. And being an ex-cricket player myself, of some interest, not that I was probably of much standard, but there you go. What you're, of course, Ben was following in the footsteps really of a family tradition. When we look at your family's involvement in the services, Susan, your grandfather was a major general, of course. And he was with the 9th Field Ambulance, a commander there. And your father was, what was he, a director? Was he a
He
flight
was,
lieutenant?
no, he, dad was a flight lieutenant, squadron leader. He was a bit of a wild one, and at 21 flew to England in 1936 in a small, tiny little paper
Wow.
plane sort of thing
Wow.
with a mate, and he joined the RAF. And he then, when the war broke out in 39, he was summoned to come home because there weren't a lot of pilots really in those days in Australia.
That's right,
So he
yeah.
spent several years with number one operational training school based in, I think it was in Bairnsdale, Sale, Tamworth, and Newcastle training pilots. And then in 42, he went up to New Guinea and he was one of the biscuit bombers on the Kokoda Trail.
Oh, wow.
He was with the 30 Squadron up there and bombing Japanese submarines. So that was what my dad did. So he was 5 years in the Air Force during the Second World War.
Well, my father was in at Kokoda too, in Milne Bay and Buna and everything. So it's
Yeah, well,
amazing.
dad was stationed at Buna, Milne Bay, and
Wow.
oh, what was the other one? He was up in Rabaul.
Yep,
He
yep.
was moved to Port Moresby.
Jeez.
Poppendetta, another
Jeez. Incredible
place that he
connection.
was stationed.
They may have passed each other at some stage. Your grandfather, tell us a little about your grandfather. He was with the 9th Field Ambulance, so.
He was actually a surgeon, not a soldier. Well, he was a soldier and a surgeon. But yes, he was Commander in Chief of the 9th Field Ambulance at Mazene and Passchendaele in 1617.
Yes. Now, Susan, you yourself, with this focus that we've been having on the wonderful Memorial Garden at Milton, and obviously what we were speaking about before at Yungaburra, these are concrete things that have been done that can be visited and utilised by the general public. But you yourself, you come from quite a background too. You're a bush girl. You grew up, where was it? Gunnedah, was I believe?
Gunnedah,
Yeah.
when the war was over, my father had met my mother when he was at training at Pilots at Tamworth. She was a country girl from property, and they met at a dance at Tamworth. And anyway, they eventually married, and Dad took up farming. Sheep and wheat property just south of Gunnedah.
Isn't that interesting? And you worked for a company which I believe had a contract with the US government, which were actually providing travel services for the US servicemen during what, 69 to 71, I think, during Vietnam War.
Yeah, I then went back to Sydney to work. I lost my brother when I was 16, and I'd gone home to the property, and then did a business course, then went back down to Sydney and ended up working for a company called Proscenia, and it had the contract with the US government looking after the Americans coming out of Vietnam. We used to get three flights, two flights one day, one flight the next coming in, and they'd be briefed by the US authorities. They'd do their money change, they'd hire civilian clothes to wear. And we were the travel organization. We'd organize fishing trips, horse riding, harbor cruises. Oh, they could go do all sorts of things. Yeah.
Well, you must have enjoyed yourself
And
too.
I
That
did
would have
that for
been
several.
wonderful.
I was quite young, and I was kept under lock and key by my her boss and the older girls. But yeah, it was interesting.
I bet too. I bet. And of course, you travelled to England back in the early 70s, I guess, a tour manager, what, in Scandinavia or something for 2 summers.
Yeah, I worked as a tour manager, tour guide, taking coach groups of English-speaking tourists through Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Holland, Belgium. So I'd do that in the summertime. Then I'd come back to London, where I was based, and take myself off for a trip somewhere, work as a temporary secretary during the winter, and then go back up to Scandinavia in the summer again. So I was, had the best of all worlds, actually.
You did indeed. Isn't that a marvelous way to spend a life and continue to spend a life where you're utilizing your talents and finding something to do that is meaningful is a joy for anyone. So I guess,
And travel in the back in this. Sorry,
yeah,
go
no, that's right. Traveling is a beautiful thing, and of course, that's part and parcel of what you've been in your life too. What are you doing now?
Well, I'm retired now. I've got to that age where I can after a long working career, and I'm living in Brisbane, but I've spent the last 5 years working voluntarily with the 42, doing fundraising events. And I'm just about to, I've bought a motor home, and I'm just about to head off in a couple of months off around Australia for 1, maybe 2 years traveling.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Susan, you must keep in contact so that we can run an ongoing travel series with you.
I
That would be good. We
lost you
must,
then.
yeah, we must stay in contact so that we can run an ongoing travel series with you.
Well, I used to take charter flights around Australia, you know, the Fokker Friendships that Bill Peach used to run. Well, I worked, my ex-husband and I worked with a company that did similar tours to those. So I've been around many times, but flying in a Fokker Friendship, now I'm going to go by ground.
Isn't that absolutely fantastic? Well, we wish you all the best for that.
Thank you.
You've mentioned obviously with the back to the 42 for 42 for a moment, with Sean and your lunches there. What you have that at the Suncorp Stadium, I believe.
The lunches, no, we have them at the Queensland Cricketers Club
Oh, lovely,
at the
lovely.
Gabba.
Yep, that's
And
absolutely.
we have huge support from a lot of the old time cricketers. Well, when I say old time, every for the last 4 years, we've had people like Ian Healy, Michael Kasperwitz, Carl Rackman. They come along, they were all there last Friday. They're very supportive. They've all been visited the garden, and yeah, they've just been amazing.
Wow. Well, that's a nice thing for all involved, and gives us even more of a reason to continue your story in the garden there too. What when you look back at what you've done, I know sometimes you look back at what you've done, and you know, for Ben's memory, and I guess the things that have been important to you in assuring that there is place for people to go to visit to remember. And can, I guess, just consider the effects on all of these conflicts. What do you see as the best result to come from these remembrance gardens?
Oh, I think, the tragedy, you look back on say the boys coming home from Vietnam. They were scorned, they were spat at, they, it was just dreadful. And our boys didn't experience that. And it's nice to have be able to create a place where they're brothers can go and sit in quiet and remember their mates. I know a lot of them have found it very healing to do that. A lot of them find it very confronting as well. But not only that, I think we've got to keep reminding the general public of what actually, in this, the way the world is today, they don't really stop and think about what is going on outside their own little nest. And we have to remember what these young people sacrificed, not only in Afghanistan, Iraq, Korea, Vietnam, Second World War, First World War. So many young men and women have given so much, and we must remember them. We must honour them still. And in Australia, we have, I think we're developing a culture far more now than before. You go to Anzac services now, and there's so many people there. It's just wonderful to see. Yes, to me, it's just keep their memories alive and
Well
honour
said.
them.
Yeah, no, well said, Susan. And to honor and to keep the memory alive is an important thing in life. And as they say, you carry that with you for the rest of your life. And we appreciate very much your thoughts on this because it helps readers and listeners understand the importance of such. So Susan Chuck, an amazing woman in her own right, but with a backstory and family connections that touch to the base of the veteran community in Australia. Thank you very much for your time.
Greg, thank you. Thank you for your love and concern to all those boys and girls.
No, and thank you for being our latest inspirational Australian woman.
Thank you, Greg. It's been
Thank
my
you, my dear.
pleasure.